Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films, Brainwashed, Sex, Camera, Power, To the Moon, and Stars at Noon. Very, very delighted with this sort of verbiage. I like it.
I love the way you made those last two titles rhyme, To the Moon and Stars at Noon. But let us begin with something a little bit less lyrical, with Brainwashed, Sex, Camera, Power. This is a documentary by Nina Menkes, who is a very independent filmmaker who normally makes fiction films. And this is a different order of thing. She is a female filmmaker. And here she is really, really interested in the way women have been portrayed in the movies for many a long year. In fact, since the beginning of movies. So Brainwashed, Sex, Camera, Power is about the power that the camera has to influence our views of sex, especially of the female gender. And that is what this movie is all about. And it is a very interesting movie if you're interested in cinema. It has a whole lot of movie clips. So the movie is basically a kind of a lecture, a kind of a classroom exercise where Nina herself appears and talks to the camera and talks to us and occasionally talks to other people on the screen and gives us a kind of a guided tour, or you might call it a kind of a crash course in the politics of the gender politics of the movies. Again, illustrated with clips that go back to the earliest days of film in the 19th century up until just a couple of years ago from now. So it's a very active movie. It's always jumping from one thing to another, even though it's basically a kind of an illustrated lecture. The illustrations are such that they keep the movie really lively and really hopping. And along the way, she also talks with various people who appear on camera discussing these same issues. One of them is Laura Mulvey. And she is the person who, way back a few decades ago, wrote an enormously famous essay called Visual Pleasure and Narrative Cinema, which really started the whole ball rolling on this phenomenally important issue of the male gaze. In a way, Brainwashed is kind of a long feature-length essay on the male gaze. And the idea behind Laura's essay was not just that there is such a thing as the male gaze, but that men control the film industry and all film industries and filmmaking so much that the camera itself has become male and looks at movies the way looks at women the way a not particularly sensitive male would. So Laura Mulvey appears in the movie from time to time talking about her hugely influential theory. And we also have filmmakers and people who appear in movies, people like Eliza Hittman and Penelope Spheeris and Julie Dash and the actor Rosanna Arquette. These and many other people also appear on screen from time to talk to us. Mainly, though, what we have is Nina Menkes guiding us through this tour. And she makes certain points which are very hard to dispute. One is, for example, that the male gendered camera and the whole apparatus of cinema, the editing, everything else about it, often presents women to us in fragments. And, oh, she's got a lot of very persuasive clips that show us the fragmented woman in movies that are really excellent and movies that are really bad. But there does seem to be a certain sameness in the way body parts are presented so often. And she talks about things like the way women are framed by the camera, the way that the camera cuts off parts of the image and gives us other parts of the image, and how telling this can be about gender attitudes, about the way that lighting, this is a very interesting part of the movie, the way that lighting affects the way that we perceive female characters on the screen. So all of this, if you've ever been within 25 miles of a graduate school where they teach cinema studies, and I've been in those places very, very often myself, then you will know a whole lot of this stuff already. But she casts an interesting light on it, and she illustrates it very persuasively with all these different clips of hers. And for people who have not been within 25 miles of a cinema studies graduate graduate school, I'm sure a lot of this will come as news. And it's very important news that everybody should have. Brainwashed sex camera power, the trouble with it is that it is obviously really on one side of things. First of all, the male gaze is a little bit of an old-fashioned concept now that we have so many genders which are in the mix that we recognize and acknowledge as being legitimate parts of people's identities. So there's gay gazes of various kinds and heterosexual gazes of various kinds and non-binary gazes. And that's touched on in the movie but not really covered. And also the way movies operate, they not only exploit women, they exploit men too. They exploit male images. Male movie stars, male beauty, and all that sort of thing. So the movie, I think, is sort of slanted over to one side. But on that one side, it gives a very lively, a very engaging, and a very well-illustrated lecture. And I really hope everybody will watch Brainwashed Sex Camera Power. It's not a perfect movie, but it's a really interesting lecture on the kind of thing that really we ought to think about more. Well, I have to think about it because I'm a film professor. But everybody ought to think about more because the movie's really do influence the way that we see other people, and particularly other people who are women. So if anybody's interested in that, and I hope everybody is, they should make a point of watching Brainwashed Sex Camera Power by Nina Menkes. By the way, check out her fiction work too as well. I recently had occasion to look again at her very fine movie, Queen of Diamonds, starring her sister, who has appeared in a lot of her movies. And she's a good filmmaker, so have a look at her work. Let's move to something completely different now. We have a couple of fiction films here. The first one I want to talk about is called To the Moon. This is actually the second movie I've seen in the past year called To the Moon. But this one is a horror movie. We have so many horror movies coming out. And that may have something to do with the times we live in. Then again, there have always been lots and lots of horror movies. I just think it's been a sort of a dominant trend recently. I think one reason is that horror movies lend themselves well in a lot of cases to low-budget filmmaking. And this is definitely a low-budget movie. It has a tiny little cast, just a few people, and has a tiny, just really one main location. And obviously, it was not made on very much money. But the writer-director, whose name is Scott Friend, makes up for that by coming up with some reasonably interesting stuff. It's not a great movie, but it's a movie I had a fairly good time watching. So what we have here is a movie about a husband and wife. Their names are Dennis and Mia, played by Scott Friend. By the way, he's the writer and director of the movie and also plays one of the three main characters. And Mia, his wife, is played by Madeline Morganweg. So they have gone away because Scott, we discover fairly early in the movie, is getting over an addiction. He apparently has been a very heavy-duty addict, and he's got to get over that. He's an actor. He's very young, but this has destroyed his budding career, and he's got to get over that. And so the two of them go off to this family home where nobody has lived for a very long time for, just for him to get over his addiction and for them to try to repair some rifts in their marriage and that sort of thing, you know. But then who shows up but Dennis's brother Roger, who is played by the wonderfully named Will Brill. And he turns out to be a rather loose cannon. He's an odd person. He's maybe a menacing person. He's maybe a threatening person, or maybe he's not. Maybe he's just a loving brother who happens to be a bit eccentric. But the whole movie is interactions among these three people, the husband and wife named Dennis and Mia, and the brother named Roger. And various strange things happen. Odd things are seen. This is off in the middle of the woods, and odd things are seen off in the distance in the woods. We hear talk of some monks who apparently live in the area. Well, what's the story with them? Are they going to become part of this movie? We hear stories of things that happened there in the past that might be threatening, that might be scary. And we have a generally escalating air of menace as the movie proceeds. The trouble with To the Moon is that it is a very, very little story with very little characters, and it develops only a little bit of menace. At least that was the case for me. One reason I wanted to look at this movie is that it's been very well received by a lot of people. A lot of critics really like it. A lot of moviegoers really like it. It's very accessible. You can stream it. So, you know, it's right there for you to look at if you like horror movies. But gee, by the end of it, I felt I had seen something that was so little, so tiny, so minimal in all ways. And I rather like minimal art. I rather like making a lot out of a little. But in this case, they sort of make a little out of a little. The performances are nice. I'm very interested in Scott Friend, who seems to be a multi-talented person, writing, directing, and starring in this movie. That's, you know, I expect we'll be seeing more of him. And the others do nice jobs playing their rather eccentric parts. But overall, I felt that To the Moon was just not enough of what it was trying to be. So it's a nice little movie, but a very big emphasis on the little. And by the way, when I say nice, it is a horror movie. So it's nice within the limitations of how nice a horror movie can be. And the ending, I want to say something about the ending of To the Moon. Like so many of today's horror movies, the ending is abrupt and mysterious. And I've been wondering about this lately. Why do so many of our horror movies these days have these abrupt, mysterious, hard-to-figure-out endings? And I now have a new theory about that. I think it's because the filmmakers figure this will get people talking. People will go onto their social media accounts. People will go onto the internet to find out more and try to figure it out. And that will increase the buzz in the movie. It will increase the interest in the movie. So I think maybe some filmmakers are deliberately obfuscating the endings to their movies so that people will start wondering about it and start chatting to each other about it online, and that will make more people want to see the movie. Maybe I'm being a little bit too cynical here, but something's going on, and To the Moon is an excellent example of it. That mysterious, abrupt, arbitrarily bizarre and inscrutable ending. So anyway, I'll be thinking more about this. In the meantime, To the Moon, a nice little tiny horror movie. And now for Stars at Noon, our final movie of the day. And this is now made by a really major filmmaker, Claire Denis. She's French. She grew up, interestingly, in colonial surroundings in Africa. And that has always affected her sort of view of the world. She's very interested in politics and in power relations. Although her movies are generally not specifically political, they generally deal with these things in sort of indirect and oblique ways, but very interesting ways nonetheless. And she is a very, very brilliant filmmaker who has done some astonishing work over the years. She's made a lot of movies. I don't think her recent work, including Stars at Noon, ranks with her very best, but she's always a filmmaker worth keeping up with and following. So Stars at Noon, it's a fairly large movie in certain ways, but it has a small number of major characters. The main character is a woman named Trish, played by Margaret Qualley, and she is really the center of the entire movie. She is a journalist. She is in Nicaragua in the present day. The movie is based on a novel that was set in Nicaragua back in the 80s, but this is set in the present day. And the movie was not shot in Nicaragua because of the present political situation in Nicaragua. Claire Denis did not want to film her movie there. She felt that would not be moral. So the movie was shot in Panama. Anyway, Trish is a journalist who apparently is not very successful these days. She's having a hard time selling a new article. A very amusing part of the movie has her having a Skype conversation with her editor, played by the wonderful actor John Q. Reilly, who's in this movie just for a tiny little bit. But anyway, she can't get him to accept her new article, and so she's sort of at sea. Here she is. She's in Nicaragua. She's a journalist. She can't get anybody to accept a new article. So what's she going to do? Well, what she does is she turns into a part-time hooker. She starts sleeping with men to pick up a few dollars here and there. And one of the men she picks up in a bar is a guy named Daniel, played by Joe Alwyn. And he turns out to have his own interesting sort of backstory. So we now have Trish and Daniel, who are sort of hooked up, and they start to sort of start traveling together. And he's mysterious. He's claiming to be sort of a business person, but she finds that he has a gun hidden away in his traveling stuff. So there's something going on with him. He's not just a business person. And the two of them travel around, and there's interactions with some Nicaraguan police and with a Costa Rican police, a policeman who was following them. And then they run into another person played by Benny Safdie, who is a CIA operative. So all of this sounds really like a thriller, but the movie is not a thriller at all. It's leisurely. It's well over 2 hours long. There are long pauses between the different things that happen where we are simply living with the characters, gradually finding out about the mysterious things in their past lives, variously finding out about things in the intrigues in their present lives. But all this is very, very slow and very, very detailed, but detailed in sort of a broad and general way where we're finding out things that are important, but we don't really find out exactly what those important things are, just that there's a gun in the luggage and that there is a failure to sell the article and stuff like that. And that's how the movie proceeds. The acting is very interesting. Margaret Qualley gives a multidimensional performance as Trish, the main character. Benny Safdie, who is mainly a filmmaker, gives a really interesting performance as the CIA operative. And just seeing him alone is worth the price of admission. He's an interesting looking guy and does a very interesting job with this enigmatic part. And in fact, all of the acting is enigmatic to some extent, and all the characters are enigmatic to some extent. And again, dramatic things happen, but they're separated by long stretches of time during which we simply exist with the characters. And that is what Claire Denis's filmmaking is so much about. It's about just living with people, exploring their lives, seeing what's going on, but not being driven from plot point to plot point the way we are in so many commercial movies. Stars at Noon, not one of the great Claire Denis movies, but an interesting movie to watch. I was never fascinated by it, but I was always interested by it and held by it. And I think it's a movie people should take a chance and have a look at. Anything by Claire Denis is worth looking at. And Stars at Noon is very much a Claire Denis movie. And that is my international story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you. As ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films Brainwashed, Sex, Camera, Power, To the Moon, and Stars at Noon.